We are going to reinforce and strengthen our vital alliances in the Pacific region.
North Korea is the focus of another UN emergency session. It's Tuesday, February 14th. This is VOA Asia. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Join us now, too, on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, changing politics in Cambodia. Experts share opinions on the Rohingya crisis. Defense of a capital increases attacks elsewhere. And the science of love. It all comes your way right now on VOA Asia. The UN Security Council has scheduled an emergency meeting starting basically as we speak, following Sunday's ballistic missile launch by North Korea, where further sanctions are to be discussed. It is the first test since the administration of President Donald Trump when he took office on January the 20th. The state-run Korean Central News Agency on Monday claimed the successful launch of its missile, which traveled about 500 kilometers before dropping into the Sea of Japan. It described the rocket as a new type of strategic weapons system that proved the reliability and security of a new mobile launch system, the solid fuel used in the missile's guidance and control features. It said it can be tipped with a nuclear warhead. South Korea said the missile was launched using a cold eject system similar to what propels submarine-launched missiles. A unification ministry spokesman said it poses serious security and military threats. Following a two-day summit between President Donald Trump and Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe, White House senior adviser Stephen Miller said Sunday the two leaders sent an unmistakable signal to North Korea.
The message is that we are going to reinforce and strengthen our vital alliances in the Pacific region as part of our strategy to deter and prevent the increasing hostility that we've seen from the North Korean regime.
Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer said Pyongyang's action was a test of a new president and welcomed Mr. Trump's display of solidarity with Mr. Abe. But the New York Democrat said more can be done than mere words.
The real answer to curtailing North Korea is China. Like on so many other areas, China has been woefully inadequate, and they could squeeze North Korea economically. 90% of the imports and exports go through China. And I think we have to tell the Chinese that they have to put the wood to North Korea in a much more serious way than they've done so far.
Stephen Norper described what was a worrisome development in an editorial. The Chinese state-run Global Times described the North's missile and nuclear testing a severe annoyance to Northeast Asia. It said persuasion to get the North to change its behavior is nearly impossible, but said tensions will continue as long as Washington turns a blind eye. Stephen Norper is a Columbia University professor, senior director of the New York-based Korea Society, and he tells VOA's Victor Beatty it was not the anticipated launch of an intercontinental ballistic missile, or ICBM.
It's interesting that it is an intermediate-range missile test. It is not an intercontinental ballistic missile test, which was what was intimated during Kim Jong-un, the North Korean leader's New Year's address. It seems that the North Koreans, in their own way, are showing a little bit of restraint in that there was action anticipated, but clearly it's not the action that would have caused more concern.
Do you attach any significance to the timing of this test coming as it did at the end of a U.S.-Japan summit?
It certainly is designed to come at the end of the meeting with Abe and Trump. Also, the fact that Trump took a call from Chinese President Xi Jinping. It's been an active few days in Asian diplomacy, and this is North Korea's bellicose way of saying, don't forget about us.
You mentioned earlier an ICBM. How close, in your view, is North Korea to testing an ICBM?
We don't know whether they really have that technology. The problems, you have to have tested reentry technology. They haven't done that. What is of concern about this test today is their suggestion that it is something beyond the Musudun intermediate range, that perhaps this Pulguksong 2 is something that has a solid fuel booster, that they're increasing their thrust capability, meaning that they could increase the range of their weaponry. And then it's a matter of reentry technology. It's a matter of miniaturization and their ability to put a warhead onto a missile of this type.
You'll find more as the story develops on our website at voanews.com and on Facebook at VOA Asia. These are among the top Asia stories trending on VOAnews.com. Bomb rips through protest rally in Pakistan, at least 13 killed. Trump's response to North Korea's missile launch raises concerns. Malaysian ship with aid for Rohingya arriving in Bangladesh. Analysts say China misses facts in chiding U.S. over contested sea. Some China cities close poultry markets amid bird flu fears. You'll find expanded coverage of these stories and much more on Facebook at VOA Asia and on our VOAnews.com website. We continue now with VOA Asia. Cambodia's charismatic opposition leader Sam Rainsy has resigned from the presidency of the Cambodia National Rescue Party. He has long been Prime Minister Hun Sen's challenger, and his resignation was seen as a surprise to his supporters, Cambodians in general, and politicians. VOA Khmer reporter Kim Seng-min joins us to explore what's next for Rainsy and Cambodia politics.
His announcement on February 11, which, on Saturday, came as a surprise to many people, even though in the letter he stated the official reason is a personal reason, but we know for sure, and he also said later in my interview, is that the ruling party is now working on a law to amend the election law, which criminalizes any party leader who has been convicted and still serving the sentence to be removed from the party. And if he refuses to do so, the party could be dissolved and also face some heavy fine up to $20,000.
It sounds like there was a bit of political pressure exerted on him to perhaps step down, more than personal reasons.
Exactly. And in his official word is, he stepped down to save the party from being dissolved.
Where does the party go from here? This is the main opposition party in Cambodia, correct?
Exactly right, sir.
Is it possible for the party to regroup without Sam Rainsy and pose as much of an opposition as it did before? Or what would be some of the things that they'll try to do?
That's a very good question. But technically, the party still functions as normal because this is not the first time the first time he resigned, but it's not the first time that Rainsy out of the country. He has been, you know, convicted and pardoned, convicted and pardoned, and been out of the country a few times. And the party has been running without him, with him managing from afar. And right now we have the opposition has this strong, also popular leadership of his deputy, Mr. Kamsaka, which formed an alliance with him before 2013 election. So they are able to keep the party up and running. And there are some concern that without him, because in Cambodia, we tend to focus on individual leader and the popularity might go down. But Rainsy made it very clear that it's not him abandoning his party. It's the pressure that we talked earlier. So it's a smart move to save the party instead of staying there and get it dissolved, and which is a disaster.
No question, his voice still carries a lot of weight.
Exactly right.
And in this day and age of social media, he would still be able to make his opinions known and perhaps influence, correct?
Some even say he is now even more popular than before, because we look at the case of Aung San Suu Kyi in Myanmar, where the junta dropped a constitution banning her from running for the president, but she still managed it from behind, and her party ended up winning the election.
So there are perhaps parallels here with Sam Rainsy.
Yeah, we have to keep an eye on that.
Keeping an eye on this story as it develops, Kim Seng-min, one of our VOA Khmer reporters. Thank you so much, Kim Seng, for stopping by and sharing details of this story with us today.
My pleasure, Jim.
Happening now in Asia, a new draft policy by China's Ministry of Environmental Protection proposes forcing steel and aluminum producers to reduce output, banning coal in Tianjin, and shutting some fertilizer and drug plants in Beijing as China tries to eliminate smog. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're happy you're with us today on VOA Asia. A Malaysian aid ship was heading to a Bangladeshi port with relief goods for some of the hundreds of thousands of Rohingya Muslims who have fled Myanmar. Shahinul Islam is the military's public relations spokesman and said that the ship anchored near Sanadia Island off the coastal district of Cox's Bazar had to be sent to Chittagong because the island had no unloading jetty facilities. He said the move was completely an issue of how the goods would be unloaded and no other issues were involved. Hundreds of thousands of Rohingya are camping in TECNAF officially and also in unregistered camps. The ship is carrying around 2,300 tons of food, medicine, and other supplies. Rohingya Muslims have long faced discrimination in majority Buddhist Myanmar. What will it take to resolve Myanmar's Rohingya situation? VOA Asia's Steve Miller reports on what regional experts say must change.
A recent report issued by the Office of the United Nations High Commissioner for Human Rights chronicles killings, gang rapes, beatings, disappearances, and other crimes and acts of cruelty against ethnic Rohingya Muslims at the hands of Myanmar security forces. Malaysian Prime Minister Najib Razak said enough is enough, sent an aid flotilla to assist the Rohingya community, but the vessel was met by protests. Pope Francis said they have been suffering for years. They have been tortured, killed simply because they wanted to live their culture and their Muslim faith. What, however, will it take to resolve the abuses outlined in the report? RAND Corporation's Jonah Blank says, at the most basic level, the governments of both Myanmar and Bangladesh must grant access to international relief workers. At a deeper level, the government in Yangon must uphold the basic human rights and civil rights of its Rohingya citizens. Greg Poling, the director of the Asia Maritime Transparency Initiative at CSIS, says, bottom line, there is no way the situation of the Rohingya improves unless the political leadership in Myanmar, meaning especially Aung San Suu Kyi, chooses to really grapple with the issue, roll back state-sanctioned discriminatory policies, and pressure the military to change its approach. Still, Stratfor Southeast Asia analyst Evan Rees notes, the Rohingya problem is rooted in deep ethnic and religious issues. Any resolution to the abuses in the Rohingya areas will require a resolution of Myanmar's long-standing civilian-military divide and a political will to compromise on wide ethnic and religious divisions. And it would take the establishment of genuine law and order on the ground in Rakhine State to effect change. It will take an active restructuring of the Myanmar police force to find an effective solution, in addition to further training in peacekeeping, empathy, and religious tolerance, among other areas, says Myanmar analyst Hunter Marston. In a closed-door meeting of officials and international agencies in Dhaka, Bangladesh this week, the group said Myanmar's government remains in denial about alleged atrocities carried out by its military against minority Rohingya Muslims. The UN High Commissioner for Human Rights said Myanmar leader Aung San Suu Kyi was moved by its report. However, she doesn't have constitutional control of the security forces. On Thursday, however, Myanmar's Foreign Affairs Ministry said authorities will conduct an investigation into alleged atrocities in the Rakhine State. The ministry's Director General, A.A. So, told Radio Free Asia, "We will have to find out how truthful these allegations are." While visiting Singapore, Indonesia's foreign minister, Retno Marsudi, said, "I would like to once again reiterate the importance of the government of Myanmar to take significant steps to create an enabling environment for peace and reconciliation to take place," warning that the crackdown could create instability in Southeast Asia. For Asia Weekly, I'm Steve Miller.
More than 300,000 Rohingya have been living in Bangladesh for decades, while about 66,000 more have crossed the border since October amid renewed persecution and targeted attacks by soldiers and majority Buddhists in Myanmar's Rakhine State. There's more on our VOA Asia Facebook page and also at voanews.com.
Do you lead a busy life? Not always able to catch your favorite VOA radio or TV program? If you are keen to stay in touch with world news and events, Give VOA Podcasts a try.
VOAnews.com.
Visit our website at VOAnews.com to learn how you can become a subscriber to VOA Podcasts and keep your life up to date.
VOA News, your trusted source for news and information.
This news alert from VOA Asia. Acting Samsung chief Lee Jae-yong was questioned for a second time Monday in South Korea in an ongoing bribery scandal. Samsung is accused of giving money to the president and her friend in exchange for favors. Samsung denies wrongdoing. Check the headlines each day with Steve Miller's Asia in a Minute on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. VOA Asia now continues as an international rights defender has accused Pakistan and the United Nations Refugee Agency of complicity in promoting unlawful and coerced repatriation of tens of thousands of Afghan refugees. In a report released Monday, Human Rights Watch alleges that in response to deadly security incidents and deteriorating political relations with Afghanistan over the past 2 years, Pakistani authorities have mounted a concerted campaign to drive Afghans out of Pakistan. The reports say that in the second half of 2016, a toxic combination of deportation threats and police abuses pushed out nearly 365,000 of the country's 1.5 million registered Afghan refugees, as well as just over 200,000 of the country's estimated 1 million undocumented Afghans. Islamabad denies allegations of any concerted campaign of abuse or coercion. HRW senior researcher Patricia Grossman warned that the refugee families pushed out of Pakistan are returning to expanding armed conflict in Afghanistan, where they also face widespread destitution and a near total absence of social services. The report harshly criticized the UN Refugee Agency, or UNHCR, for allegedly facilitating repatriation of refugees from Pakistan, saying that the agency was actually complicit in this forced return of displaced families. Meanwhile, the top U.S. commander in Afghanistan tells VOA Kabul has consciously decided to concentrate its security forces around population centers, which is partly what has led to the Taliban gaining territory. VOA's Amy Katz reports that the comments came shortly after General John Nicholson appeared on Capitol Hill asking for more troops for his mission.
Taliban forces in Afghanistan now control approximately 15% of Afghan territory. But that's intentional, according to the commander of U.S. forces in Afghanistan, General John Nicholson.
Yeah, we're differentiating between territory and population. So the Afghan security forces have focused on the population versus the territory. And so, as we know, many of the areas in Afghanistan are very sparsely populated. And so rather than have military outposts in remote areas, they have focused on the areas where the greatest number of people live.
In an interview with VOA's Afghanistan service, General Nicholson said fewer than 14,000 troops are left in the American-led international forces, a fraction of the peak of more than 100,000 troops in 2011. But he says he needs a few thousand more troops now to work with the Afghan security forces.
So additional soldiers would perform duties as advisors with Afghan units at the brigade level around the country.
Earlier, the U.S. commander told the Senate Armed Services Committee Afghan forces have sustained not only territorial losses, but also heavy casualties. He stressed the need to help increase Afghan air power and provide them with the resources to nearly double the number of Afghan special forces in the next 4 years.
Offensive capability is what will break the stalemate in Afghanistan. The key offensive capabilities in the Afghan security forces are their special forces and their air force.
General Nicholson also explained that the Afghan fight for peace has been complicated by Russian attempts to undermine NATO and its Afghan partners. Amy Katz, VOA News, Washington.
You're listening to VOA Asia. Well, we've noted the calendar says February 14th. Just in time for Valentine's Day, researchers discover a hormone that can enhance activity in the brain associated with sexual arousal and romantic love. VOA's Faith Lapidus reports.
This Valentine's Day, love may be in the air, but it's also in the mind. Scientists at Imperial College London say a natural hormone, appropriately named kisspeptin, enhances brain regions associated with sex and love. In placebo-controlled trials, 29 healthy young men were injected with kisspeptin, and their brains were scanned using an MRI, as they were shown sexual or romantic images of couples.
During the MRI, they performed tasks designed to activate certain areas of the brain. So we used tasks to activate the sexual arousal centers of the brain and tasks to activate the romance centers of the brain using images. And we observed that kisspeptin boosted the activity in sexual arousal and romantic circuits in the brain.
Kisspeptin is found in men and women and is vital for stimulating puberty.
So there's a link not just with the hormones, but also with the hormone that's stimulating reproductive hormones, but also stimulating how we perceive sexual images in the brain. And that's what the really exciting part of this study has been, is for the first time having a link between a hormone that's stimulating reproductive hormones, but also how our brains perceive sexual images.
When unpleasant images were shown during the test, kisspeptin sparked activity in parts of the brain associated with negative moods, raising the possibility it could help treat depression. Another potential therapy is an injection to treat sexual disorders that are psychological in origin. Faith Lapidus, VOA News.
Our love is having you joining us each day for VOA Asia. Follow us as well on Facebook at VOA Asia. Our thanks to director Tracy Carter and engineer Nelson Lopes, managing editor Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team, Steve Miller, Ali Ogden, Eli Zimmerman, An Ying. We thank you so much for joining us. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We hope you have a wonderful day ahead.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States congratulates the people of Somalia on the successful conclusion of their national electoral process and the election of Mohamed Abdullahi Mohamed as the next president of the federal government of Somalia. The United States looks forward to working closely with the new president and government. Acting State Department spokesperson Mark Toner said, "We commend the Somali security forces and the African Union mission in Somalia for their efforts over the past 6 months to allow the electoral process to unfold in a relatively safe and secure environment. This transition represents an important step forward for the country." Mr. Toner said, "We commend the thousands of Somalis from across the country, including youth and women, who were able to vote in greater numbers than in the 2012 elections, but regret the numerous credible reports of irregularities in the electoral process. We encourage Somalia's new administration to take credible steps to stamp out corruption and to establish strong electoral institutions to enable a free and fair one-person, one-vote poll in 2020. The formation of a new government is critical to addressing Somalia's most pressing problems, the most immediate of which is perhaps the possibility of famine due to severe drought, rising prices, continued limited access to food, and dry forecasts. The United States looks forward to working in partnership with the president and the new government to advance reconciliation, drought relief, security, and build the strong institutions to deliver good governance and development for the Somali people."
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials.